Good morning. My name is Kim, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Weatherford International Third Quarter 2016 Earnings Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. We ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up, then re-enter the queue for any additional questions that you may have. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, today's call is being recorded. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Karen David-Green, Vice President of Investor Relations and Corporate Marketing and Communications. You may begin.
Thank you, Kim. Good morning and welcome to the Weatherford International Third Quarter Conference Call. With me on today's call, we have Bernard de Rockdanner, Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer, and Krishna Chevron, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Today's call is being webcast, and a replay will be available on Weatherford's website for 10 days. Before we begin with our opening comments, I'd like to remind our audience that some of today's comments may include forward-looking statements and non-GAAP financial measures. These matters may involve risks and uncertainties that could cause our actual results to differ materially from our forward-looking statements. Please refer to our Form 10-K for the period ended December 31, 2015, Form 10-Q for the quarter ended June 30, 2016, and current reports on Form 8-K for risk factors and the customary caution on forward-looking statements. We welcome your questions after the prepared statement. And now I'd like to hand the call over to Krishna.
Thank you, Karen, and good morning, everyone. Let me start with a recap of our operating performance in the third quarter. Excluding the revenue impact of the Zubair project, which is now completed and which had an extraordinary adjustment in our second quarter results, the revenue grew by 1% sequentially, marking the first sequential increase after seven consecutive sequential quarterly declines. This clearly marks a troughing of the cycle for the industry and for us. And from now on, we expect to see a steady recovery on a sequential basis. Operating income before R&D and corporate expenses improved marginally by $5 million, with sequential operating income margins improving by 48 basis points to negative 8.2%. Incrementals, excluding Zubair, were strong at 77%. Loss per share for the quarter before charges and credits was 39 cents. EBITDA at $68 million was $10 million better than in the second quarter. In the third quarter, we recorded after-tax charges of $1.4 billion. The principal items included a non-cash charge of $718 million for the impairment of assets and inventory that have remained idle on a persistent basis and cannot support their carrying value any longer, and a non-cash charge of $683 million for tax valuation allowances, principally in the United States, where accounting guidance dictates that deferred tax assets based on tax-benefited losses cannot exceed certain thresholds. If we had been able to record a similar tax rate as in the second quarter, our loss per share for the quarter would have been 27 cents. The economic value of these tax benefits are not lost. The tax benefit on the U.S. losses can be carried forward for 20 years, and we can use these losses in the future, resulting in negligible cash taxes for several years to come. Going forward, for the next several quarters, we will not be able to record a tax benefit on our U.S. losses. This means that our future tax charge will largely reflect cash taxes paid internationally, mainly in jurisdictions where deemed profit and withholding taxes apply. Lastly, we also recorded charges of $20 million for severance and restructuring. Getting back to the third quarter operating results now. North America revenue increased 12% sequentially versus an average U.S. rig count increase of 14%. Canada resurfaced after the spring breakup, benefiting completions, artificial lift, and well construction. Operating income margins improved by 394 basis points, but are still weighed down by poor pricing levels and remain negative. Internationally, excluding Zubair, revenue declined by 4%. Latin America revenue improved by 2%, principally coming from increased activity in Mexico, Bolivia, and Colombia. This revenue uplift, coupled with cost actions taken in late Q2 and into Q3, resulted in a 453 basis point improvement in operating income margins to reach 5.1%. In the Europe-Caspian, Russia, Sub-Sahara Africa region, continued sharp activity declines offshore West Africa and on land in Nigeria dominated a reasonably resilient performance in Russia and the North Sea, resulting in a sequential revenue reduction of 8%. Operating income margins improved in Russia and in the North Sea continental Europe region due to cost control measures and activity mix, while Sub-Sahara Africa margins plunged in line with revenue to reduce the overall region margin by 123 basis points to minus 1%. In the Middle East, North Africa, Asia-Pacific region, excluding the Zubair contract, the sequential revenue decrease of 5% reflected activity reductions across the Asia-Pacific region, while pricing headwinds in the Middle East more than offset activity increases. Operating income margins declined 213 basis points to a small loss, essentially coming from the Asia-Pacific region, where activity levels are at historic lows. Revenue for the land rigs business declined 10%, with lower sequential utilization rates and margins, and were hampered by rig maintenance and delays in equipment and personnel reactivations in Algeria. On the cost side, we have completed the headcount reduction plan of 8,000, generating annualized savings of $504 million. Also, we ceased operations in three manufacturing facilities during the quarter, bringing the year-to-date total to 10, which is in excess of the 9 planned closures for the year. Finally, we closed 5 operating facilities, mainly in the United States, for a total of 59 for the year. Given the current market context and the anticipated increase in activity levels, we have chosen to preserve capability to address the upcoming growth. Below operating margins, R&D costs reduced by $8 million, while corporate costs were down by $4 million, reflecting continued spending cuts. These levels are now sustainable going forward. The tax charge recorded in the third quarter of $32 million approximately reflected the cash taxes paid internationally, comprising withholding taxes and deemed profit countries where taxes are levied on revenue without regard for income levels. As already explained, for the foreseeable future, we cannot benefit the losses in the U.S. until we reach a level of sustained profitability. This means that the tax rate for future periods will largely reflect the cash taxes paid internationally, and our current estimate is a quarterly charge of between $30 million and $40 million, dependent on the geographical mix of revenue and earnings. Moving on to the near-term outlook now. We expect continued robust recovery in activity levels in both the U.S. and in Canada, with growth in rig count on land. The growth will be driven by both completions and artificial lift, which are expected to improve sequentially, with customers aggressively working through the DUC, which is drilled but uncompleted inventory of wells. Additionally, we expect to put 2 more pressure pumping fleets to work, bringing the total number of active crews to 9 by year-end. While pricing remains challenged in the U.S. pressure pumping market, the first step to recovering pricing is increased utilization. There are industry-wide signs of slowly tightening capacity. While year-end holidays and seasonal factors will weigh on the results, we expect to grow both revenue and margins in North America. Internationally, we expect to see continued modest growth in Latin America, a reasonable growth in the Europe, Caspian, Russia, Sub-Sahara Africa region, with growth in the North Sea based on recent contract awards and the deployment of an offshore MPD package on a deepwater rig coupled with a bottomed-out but stable Sub-Sahara Africa, which more than offsets a seasonal slowdown in Russia. In the Middle East, Asia-Pacific region, we expect activity increases in the GCC region based on recent contract wins and some positive tick-up in product sales. While pricing continues to be under pressure across the entire region, we do not expect any further deterioration in pricing from current levels. In summary, we expect a solid quarter of growth coming up in the fourth quarter, with improved margins. Moving on to net debt and cash flow now. Free cash flow in the third quarter was a disappointing negative $147 million. Included in the third quarter's cash flow were capital expenditures of $62 million, $101 million of debt interest payments, and $38 million of cash severance and restructuring costs. Although working capital generated $65 million of cash, principally from a reduction in inventory balances, this was well short of expectations, as a large number of customers are actively managing cash flow and further delaying payments to service companies across the board. As of Q3, we are light about $200 million on customer collections. Many of our customers are paying us well outside contractual credit terms. We have never experienced this degree of willful disregard of contractual terms by several of our customers. Obviously, these customers have solid credit and recoverability is not in question, but the timing of collections is clearly delayed. As our customers will benefit from better oil prices going forward, we expect them to improve their payment cycle in the fourth quarter and into next year. At the same time, we have been making normal payments to our vendors, which in a sense is similar to paying down debt obligations. Free cash flow in the fourth quarter is expected to improve sequentially, with better expected operating margins, higher customer collections, continued inventory reductions, and lower cash severance payments. Net debt in the third quarter increased by $271 million to reach $7.1 billion as of 30th September, reflecting the negative free cash flow during the quarter and certain rig lease buyouts at the end of the lease period. As of September 30th, available liquidity remained very strong at $1.4 billion, including $1 billion of revolver capacity and $440 million of cash balances. With no substantial debt maturities in 2017 and 2018, we have enough liquidity to manage our needs. And with that, I will now turn the call over to Bernard.
Thank you, Krishna. Q3 marked an end and a beginning. We believe it is the end of the retrenchment and the end of the legacy cleanup for Weatherford. We believe it is the beginning of the recovery and over time an expansion, but a more efficient and profitable expansion than ever achieved. Operationally, Q3 was a transition quarter, with a tail end of pricing running through our P&L offset by last of cost cuts. It made for flat sequential revenues with the beginning of an improvement in EBITDA. In the course of the quarter, we had a higher activity increases in a number of markets and a significant increase in incremental business order book. Q3 was also the last market-related reserves and write-downs. You should not expect any further material charges going forward. The valuation allowance for use of tax losses in the U.S. taken in Q3 is different from write-downs. With evidence of a U.S. recovery and return to sustained profitability, this should be gradually reversed and recredited with each quarter. Lastly, Q3 was also the final step towards closing all legacy issues from the administrative problems of 10 and 11 and 12. I'm referring to a recent settlement with the SEC concerning the tax restatements of 11 and 12. At quarter's end, all issues, and I mean all issues, involving governmental agencies and civil lawsuits, all of them, have now been settled and closed. There are no exceptions, there are no tails, and there are no exposures. Weatherford is done. Looking back at original results, in NAM, Q3 can be marked as the first sign of a turnaround. By mid-August, client inquiries were substantially increased. September was materially stronger. We are in recovery mode for NAM. In Latin America, we expected Q3 to be further challenged. Q3 actually improved over Q2, driven by cost cuts, but mostly by early gains, primarily in Mexico and Colombia. We are changing our prognosis based on all we see. We are in early recovery mode in enough parts of Latin America that should carry the whole region. Latin America will recover initially more slowly than NAM, but is nonetheless the beginning of a recovery. Eastern Hemisphere saw its low in Q3, a combination of pricing concessions running through the whole quarter, but predominantly further activity deterioration in Asia and SSA. They've been the two most challenged regions and to date the worst performers in the hemisphere. The rest of the hemisphere improved, but not enough to offset these declines. Europe, Caspian, and Russia continued to improve. MENA improved quarter on quarter, but not as much as expected. We now have some client project delays, but they're not long delays, as the forward views will highlight. By the end of the quarter, the trend was clear. Eastern Hemisphere as a whole is turning. The synthesis is the same for all regions. Q3 marked the end of the decline for all regions. We're in recovery mode, different spending on region and product lines, but recovery nonetheless. And to be completely clear, both NAM and international are in recovery mode. From this point forward, we should expect improvements in profitability, improvements in margins, on the back of a very lean cost structure and a thoroughly improved operating bench and leadership. Forward views. The following forward views are for Q4. They have relevance to 17 as a directional extension of Q4. A summary and in order of contribution for Q4, from the highest to the lowest. First, MENA will improve markedly in Q4. Second, NAM will improve. As a simple marker, a simple marker for NAM, revenue growth is expected to exceed that of the rig count. Third, Latin America will continue its gradual recovery. There will be a modest further improvement in Q4. Four, Russia and Europe Caspian will be flat. Seasonal trends affect the rate of improvement. Europe Caspian and Russia have behaved very well throughout the declines. They remain profitable throughout 15 and 16, albeit at a fraction of their 14 levels. But Q4 flat, most likely. The last two regions, Asia and SSA, Sub-Saharan Africa, will not deteriorate further. They are at their trough. I add below more granularity from geographically, going from west to east, which is, I will cover in more details, NAM, Latin America, and MENA. That's not by in order of contribution, but just going from west to east. In Q4, NAM will show volume and improving margins driven by fixed cost absorptions. All product lines will benefit, but some more and earlier than others. For us, the first movers are clearly completion, lift, drilling services, wireline, and even drilling tools, otherwise called rentals. These product lines will deliver quarter-on-quarter high incrementals. Completion will be the star performer. Obviously, reduction in ducts is one issue, but we are also gaining share in the plug and perforated segment. Similarly, the completion of ducts will accelerate the turn in our lift. In our lift are also inventory movements, in fact, in many forms of lift, which will cause added market impetus above and beyond increased activity. Let me explain. With the largest player worldwide, including NAM, in all forms of lift except ESPs. Normally, lift is an island of resilience and stability. With the unprecedented collapse of NAM activity, lift experienced unusually large, by any historical standards, client destocking of new and parts inventory, as well as severe curtailment of the new well market. This deterioration was much worse in our forms of lift and the ESP segment, because of the types of wells ESP addresses. As a correlation, our lift and all non-ESP lift peers have much more to recover with a turn in the market, effective pretty much now. Drilling service will see very large absorption benefit with volume finally rising from very distressed levels. The complexity of some of the well designs open opportunities for both our high-angle RSS and high-temperature LWD. These applications and opportunities have greatly diminished in the U.S. since 14. This is very helpful for our drilling services profitability in NAM. Much of the engineering and applications planning core of NAM drilling services was kept intact as precious muscle for the recovery. The carry cost overhead burden heavily the U.S. region. Volume increases will be, therefore, incrementally very rewarding. Some of the most distressed product lines, ones we very seldom talk about, will show life. For the best example, the easiest illustration is drilling tools or rentals. Our rentals product line restrained their market participation since pretty much the end of 14. Pricing levels had reached levels where use of tools was grossly unattractive on all levels. We gave up share. Our rental asset utilization in Q3 was barely 7%. In addition to sitting out part of the market, we secure the integrity of our stacked rental fleet through methodical inspection and rigorous maintenance. All of it is ready for market deployment with improved demand. Now, demand will come with drilling activity, but there are already developing pockets of equipment shortages. We had 2 years of wear and tear and no replacement capital. The excess tubular and pressure control equipment is much diminished, And of course, the increase in laterals is an additional factor in overrides in market demand. So in other words, you'll find some positive trends in rentals. But pressure pumping will also rise commensurately, but marginal contributions won't be comparable to the other product lines. Unless pricing rises in pressure pumping, incrementals simply won't be comparable. Now, in pressure pumping, volume is increasing. Our pressure pumping utilization moved from 6 spreads in September to 8 in October, and most likely will end the year at 9. Our completion and wireline product lines are added on most of our spreads. They are bid purposefully as a bundle or integrated offering. This is a trend likely to increase with utilization. With 9 spreads deployed out of 10 active, we'll reach about 90% utilization of our marketable capacity. The remaining 10 spreads, or 500,000 horsepower, have not been cannibalized. They've been kept cold stacked, but with full periodic maintenance and upgrades. The cost to bring them back on the market will be modest. The larger challenge will be labor and efficiency. This will limit the speed at which we decide to scale up our market presence. We want to keep the highest efficiency on our deployed spreads. For pressure pumping, we'll prioritize efficiency and individual returns versus rushing for fleet utilization. Overall, in NAM, there are small upward price movements in a few instances and for different product lines. It is not widespread. Pricing on all NAM products and service lines, not just pressure pumping, remain therefore for now at extraordinarily low levels. The industry has never operated at such pricing level, let alone for long periods of time. It's fair to describe part of what went on in 15, even more so this year, as a process of industry liquidation. This pricing level is not sustainable. It can't work, even with large-scale efficiencies and the like. Pricing will need to improve for all. With the exception of pressure pumping, where upward pricing correction will take longer and always uncertain, we think NAM pricing for most product lines will gradually increase in a measured way, but increase nonetheless in quarters ahead. Internationally, MENA and Latin America are the largest expected movers in Q4. Europe and Russia will be well-behaved, but entering seasonal slowdown that limits their upside. Latin America first. It's likely to show modest improvements building on Q3's first steps. Mexico and Colombia were at unheard of historical lows first half of 16. They improved some in Q3 and are both showing further recovery in Q4. It's important for us because both were historically our largest markets in the region, which makes their move meaningful. Argentina and Brazil are unlikely to improve for now, and neither is Venezuela. But we don't expect our Argentina or Brazil business to soften either, flat. Venezuela, in our case, is more sort of an example of self-discipline. Venezuela kept it to a minimum with less than $25 million a quarter for PDVSA. We have brought operations in Venezuela to the absolute bare bones. We can't shrink it any further without exiting the country altogether. MENA is not about first steps in recovery. MENA is all about self-help, the rebuilding of lost presence in keystone Middle Eastern markets. Laying the seeds to recover our position has been a long 2-year process in the making. And length of time, of course, is typical for this part of the world. There are now tangible results. By the end of Q3, MENA had already been awarded $1.5 billion net incremental contracts for a time period between 3 and 4 years. On average, pricing reflects market conditions and is reasonable. Furthermore, absorption effects will be powerful in that region and allow for significant margin expansion. This incremental activity specifically for Kuwait, Abu Dhabi, Oman, Algeria, and Saudi Arabia. Q4 will run at significantly higher levels than Q3 and 17 even more so. The product line exposure is broad-based, but completion and formation evaluation, that is drilling services and wireline, have the most gains. Managed pressure drilling and well construction are a strong second. In short, effective Q4, MENA is back at Weatherford, growth and margins. As a synthesis, Q4 will be a first quarter recovery. Q4 is essentially all MENA and NAM. Revenues will rise, EBITDA will rise, earnings loss will improve, and free cash flow will be positive and catch up as much as we can of prior quarter shortfalls. It is too early to be specific about 17. Signs point to further recovery building on Q4. This feels reasonable. We are at exceptionally low levels of activity and pricing. If oil does no more than hold at $50 throughout 17, we would have further activity gains and improved financial performance on the back of an extremely lean cost structure and much improved operating bench and leadership. This is what we believe. Now, will oil stabilize and oil rise further? We have views like everybody else, but rather than make personal commentary, which is probably not worth very much, I will state a recent quote from Saudi's energy minister. They sum up our own conclusion from a far more authoritative source. Read the quote, it's not long. Beginning of the quote. Rapid non-OPEC production growth has reversed with major cuts in upstream investments and the steepening of decline rates. Without investment, that trend is likely to accelerate to the point that some analysts are now sounding warning bells of future supply shortfalls, and I am in that camp. Few last words on our direction. Direction is focus and discipline. It is today, right now, it is all operations managing the expansion underway. What does it mean? We'll market our bedrock, our technology through our 1,000 strong base infrastructure. We'll develop and use our technology strength like we never have before to carve out proprietary innovative solutions. Not all client-based solutions are revolutionary in nature. Many or most are evolutionary. We have a deep bench of technology which has not been harvested the way it could. It is being harvested here and now and will be developed further. The few items disclosed in the press release, and we'll do this every quarter, illustrate what we're achieving routinely in technological breakthroughs. Successes cover different product lines ranging this quarter from TRS to formation evaluation. They also illustrate closeness with clients, client intimacy joined with specific technological applications to specific client productivity and field development objectives is what we want to be known for. Beyond technology, operations will focus on two objectives: state-of-the-art operational efficiencies and achieving industry-leading quality execution. We aim to keep the lowest fixed cost structure feasible regardless of activity increases. We also want to be the industry's lowest NPT, non-productive time, on all product and service delivery in any and all of our locations. We want to be the most reliable. Operations objectives can be summed up with two words: efficiency and quality. In 14, adjusting for divestments, Weatherford had about $14 billion in revenues and $3 billion in EBITDA. This year, 16, we'll have less than $6 billion in revenues and less than $500 million in EBITDA. We lost about $4 billion in activity and $4 billion in pricing, almost the same size loss. We took out 43%, almost 44%. Of our payroll worldwide, substantially cut our layers of management, upgraded in-depth operating management, and restructured our supply chains and shut down many inefficient facilities worldwide. To the best of our knowledge, this resulted in cuts of about $4.5 billion in variable costs and about $1 billion in fixed costs that we could identify. With activity, we'll have fast-rising EBITDA. We used to have $3 billion of EBITDA, and with our structural fixed cost revolution, we arguably could be about $4 billion or $1.25 billion. Lastly, the capital intensity of our core business, or core businesses, plural, is much lower than it was historically, while we have the entire infrastructure built up. This company will turn and grow on far less capital. The cuts in fixed costs are permanent and sustainable, even after a more than doubling of activity, and we have ample capacity. Our supply chain and over 1,000 strong location infrastructure can accommodate three times the present activity level. Our bedrock of technology runs deep and broad within our core and with applications we haven't put on the market yet. We have vastly improved our operating bench and leadership. Our NPT and safety statistics today earn us acknowledgments and distinctions throughout the world. While our HR hiring, training, and talent development is at par with our industry's best and orders of magnitude better than it was. Lastly, we have a legal and financial bench which is second to none in this industry. The accomplishments delineated above have not had the time to demonstrate a change in operating economics and financial results. We understand this. We also believe they will now and in 17. We are entering the recovery phase for our industry. We believe with honesty and confidence, Weatherford is a different company, a much improved company. As the recovery unfolds, Weatherford will provide and must provide the financial performance to evidence this transformation. With that, I'll turn the call to the operator for Q&A.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up, then re-enter the queue for any additional questions you may have. And your first question comes from the line of James West with Evercore. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, Bernard.
Good morning.
So a couple questions. One on the North Sea, you sound much more optimistic than, I would say, your peers around the North Sea. Is that a factor of contract wins? And maybe this question goes to MENA as well. Have you been picking up market share in both those regions, giving you a better perspective or a better growth trajectory than your peers?
We have. We picked up market share in the North Sea. We picked up market share also in MENA, it's obvious. We haven't really picked up market share. We're regaining market share that we had lost some years ago.
Okay.
Market share in the North Sea is on and around managed pressure drilling, sub-drilling services also, and it's balanced between the UK and Norway. Norway, we never had a large presence. It's now becoming a bit more sizable. MENA, I think I gave some enough, you know, geographic backdrop. I can
sure.
give you more details.
Sure. Okay, fair enough. Is managed pressure drilling picking up more in the North Sea than it has historically? Is that, I mean, I know you're the dominant player there. Is that the reason?
Actually, as point of fact, no, because you know, the entire offshore sector is so depressed and durably so. Actually, managed pressure drilling is picking up market share in general in some of the land applications, but it just so happens in North Sea we had some clients that invested in MPD, and that it's happening now, and so therefore the prognosis is better for us in North Sea. But in general, SSA and all the offshore markets being the way they are, MPD being a natural application for all deep water, and certainly all offshore markets. More so and before so land, that has been deferred. It's just gains in North Sea and also on land, but elsewhere.
Okay.
May I also add, this is Krishna, James. So on land, particularly in the Middle East, for all gas drilling applications in several countries, MPD is now becoming more compulsory almost as a requirement. So we are seeing some rapid growth on land.
Yeah. And the driver is cost, safety, and I'll stop there. And cost is actually a lot to do with fluids more than anything else.
Sure.
As opposed to the speed of drilling, and then safety is obvious. So it's becoming, given time, it's becoming the norm for any kind of drilling that is viewed as high pressure, so gas being the classic example.
Okay. And if I could pivot real quick to North America and artificial lift business, so clearly a destocking is going on with your customer base here. Are there and that will reverse itself as NAM picks up? Are there any new technologies you've introduced as well that may enhance your position in lift?
We are introducing new technology, but for now I'd rather not talk about it too much. Give us a few quarters so we can have trials and things along those lines, and we'll see. And it's not only for NAM, it's also internationally. There's some trials going on also in Middle East. I think for now it should suffice that the non-ESPs forms of lift, which there are four, are reciprocating, progressing, hydraulic, and gas, but the first three in particular, have had the biggest competitor in 15-16 actually has been destocking, as opposed to one another. Now, in ESPs, it has been far less the case, which makes it, in a down market, a much better product line, simply because those wells don't go down and not deferred in terms of maintenance, and so the cycle of replacement remains quite healthy, whereas the others, depending on how low the business gets, will get cycles of deferral, and we have extensive ones, and on top of all, our clients' pressure cash flow have been using their inventories of all manners of reciprocating and progressive cavity pump lift products, which has made life far more difficult for lift. than normally there is in a down market. Now, the flip is that there is an inventory turn, of course, which is coming. Yes, in addition to an increase in activity.
Got it. Okay, thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, James.
And your next question comes from the line of David Anderson with Barclays. Your line is open.
Yeah, hey, Bernard, can you just help me understand some of the moving parts in North America and what drove the sequential growth this quarter? I'm just kind of curious how much of a headwind with the attributed running services in the Gulf this quarter, and maybe just tell us kind of what parts of onshore outperformed. Was it rentals? Was it, you talked about lift, of course, pressure pumping. Maybe I'm missing something here.
No, it's very simple, actually. Most of the non-pressure pumping product lines started moving in volume towards the end of the quarter. The volume increase in simple terms in NAM was, in Q3, was for us unusually high for pressure pumping versus anything else. And so that sums up the quarter when you look at it. This is Q3, right? Now, if you looked at September, you saw movements in all the other categories of production service lines, which gives us the visibility into Q4. If you look at July and August, I would have to say, to be simplistic, but it's correct, it was predominantly pressure pumping, which is unusual because that's not where we, that's not the core of our core. And in pressure pumping, I'm afraid that, you know, at least our experience is that with the pricing level we have absorption benefits, true, and that's a good thing, but it's still very limited at the end of the day versus the other production service lines, they're high incrementals. But another way, we started the quarter between 3 and 4, you know, spreads utilized, we ended the quarter close to 6 in pressure pumping. Therein lies the increase that took place. Then again, in September, you had all the full range of the other production service lines beginning their move and much stronger into October.
And, so, and just to complete the thing on the Gulf of Mexico, clearly there was an activity reduction in the Gulf of Mexico, which did affect our offshore product lines. So the bottom line is that the land pickup was extremely good to offset the offshore reduction.
That is also true.
And North America, you know, I mean, shows the mix really. Our results really show the mix there.
But at this point, David, I think our Gulf of Mexico mix for the U.S. alone, because Canada obviously is non-issue, must be less than 10%.
Yeah.
Okay. That gives you so. But I think the reduction in the Gulf was happening already in Q2.
Yes.
And more in Q3, so it affects liner hangers, cementation, TRS, all of that. That's absolutely correct also. But
the land
segment was still lopsided, was pressure pumping, much more so than it will be in the future. It's just the way it happened.
Right. So, you know, you just said that, you know, you called pressure pumping kind of not the core of your core, and that is kind of one thing I'm kind of wondering about. You know, about a month ago, you kind of sounded like you were potentially thinking about exiting the pressure pumping business. You know, this quarter, you're talking about adding some more pressure pumping. Can it help us understand what your thinking is regarding the pressure pumping? Where does it fit in over the next couple of years? What do you want to do with this business, really, ultimately?
Well, first of all, we have and we want to make it better in terms of the quality of the equipment, meaning the maintenance, number one, which we have done. Number two, how well we run it. And also the combination in terms of applications with completion and wireline. Wireline being, you know, completion wireline being obviously, you know, to plug and perforate. Now, what will we do with it? We certainly are not interested in selling it today. It's the wrong time to sell anything today, our view. So that's not in the picture. What we do later, I don't think we'll put any capital in it. Why? Because it's got low barriers to entry and, frankly, through cycles, low returns. We've also learned that we need to focus all our time and attention on the service and product lines that have the highest return through cycles. We're very clear on this. So we're not going to put any capital of any significance in that business, but we'll protect it, we'll enhance it, and we may or may not divest of it, but not today and not anytime soon. Wrong time.
And you know, we use it also as a vehicle to bundle some of our higher return businesses around pressure pumping. So that it does serve as a vehicle. As long as pressure pumping can return its cost with a positive contribution to margins, that's what we're focused on.
And just for an added color on the whole thing, our entire fleet, the one that we've kept, which is a million horsepower, is all organic. It was never acquired, which makes it, by industry standards, relatively young. It's all the same OEM, which makes it also, from a maintenance standpoint, very coherent and easier to manage. And as I mentioned in my comments, I meant what I said. We have cold stacked maintained that equipment, maybe too well, because it was an expenditure that went through our P&L, not our CapEx. But it is in good shape. And we're not going to rush to put it on the market, but just do it gradually when we get decent incrementals. So the product has been protected and also has been, I think, enhanced best we can, with the notion to make it more valuable, either to sell one day or just to run it and have proper return, but not to grow it. That's our mentality. And Krishna is absolutely right. The added bundled sales of wireline and completion, to give you an idea, it was very, very low initially. In Q3, it was about 50% of our fleet on the market had our wireline and completion. We think this moves to 75, 80% in Q4, et cetera. That's actually interesting, although that is reflected in the completion of wireline, margin and contribution, not pressure pumping, but it is facilitated by it. That's another consideration.
Okay. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Bill Herbert with Simmons. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning, Bernard. I was wondering if you could elaborate on Eastern Hemisphere and MENA, and if I heard you correctly, markedly improved in the fourth quarter, both top line and margins. I'm curious with regard to the statement on top line. You highlighted the impressive wireline contract win, but I'm just curious as to whether, one, that starts in the fourth quarter, and two, there are other contract wins that you did not highlight in the fourth quarter that provide you with the visibility and confidence for the significant top line and margin improvement in Q4.
Well, the one that was put in the press release is simply because it happens to be a large number. I'm not going to put all the contracts in the press release because that's probably not terribly helpful. The other, but it's not all clear, $1.5 billion that we have right now, today, and that's a number that will move up over a period of time in the next quarters, is not all wireline, obviously not. DS, drilling services, is the second largest component. DS is in Kuwait again, it is in Abu Dhabi again, and it is also in Saudi Arabia. And then you have your completion. Completion is not as big of a dollar number as a wireline, but it is very high margin. And again, that one would be in the markets I just mentioned. And then you have managed pressure drilling on land, which is something that we're trying to manage the growth as carefully as we can from a quality of execution standpoint. So we're not going to go very fast on that. And it is progressing, Saudi Arabia being the leader on it. And, of course, you have a series of liner hangers, cementation, TRS on land, applications also in terms of separate contracts to be added to it. Lift, not really, except a few trials of technology, but not really lift. That would be the only one that would be missing in out of these incremental contracts in MENA. We have the equipment for that contract. I'll just make a general statement. We have the equipment. The equipment is in region or is coming in region from other regions. So the capital requirement is very, very low in terms of fixed assets. We do have the equipment. We have the equipment well maintained, identified, and everything else. And equipment is already being deployed. In the case of wireline, in the case of DS, and in the case of completion is a products business, the equipment is being deployed. Managed pressure drilling is being deployed. Actually, it's being already executed on. So this is not a situation where you're going to have these sort of lumpy contracts and all of a sudden we choke on the volume and so forth and so on. Not at all. We've learned our lessons. There being equipment has been identified, been deployed, people have been trained already. It's going to be gradual. It's all not all going to be in Q4. Of course not. No. It's going to be throughout 2017, there'll be further growth. Be mindful of the fact that I think we have been disappointing and disappointed in MENA for 2 years now, a bit longer actually, and there's been a considerable amount of work, regaining a presence in that market, which, going back many years, was our most profitable region on all measures and highest return region on all measures. we lost it, and why we lost it is probably not something we should discuss on this call. Many of you know why, but recovering it has been a very high priority. We have finally made some progress. If we execute well, it's all about NPT. Our technology performs, again, it's all about NPT. Then I think this will be a repeat performance for future volume gains on the broad set of product and service lines. I really believe this.
Yeah, so in order to specifically frame the question so we're better positioned here going into this quarter in terms of expectations, I'm just curious as to whether we could just kind of, if you feel comfortable doing so, specify, I mean, because the adjectives were markedly, you sort of seem to indicate a relatively rigorous rate of sequential improvement, and I'm just trying to calibrate that with regard to the magnitude of sequential revenue improvement as well as margin improvement in MENA for Q4. What are a sort of a realistic set of expectations on those fronts?
So, first, I will let Krishna answer that. One lesson we have also learned many lessons, is that we have, I think, with trying our best, everything else, I think you'll agree with me that guidance has not been our forte when we quantify things. And that would be a charitable comment. We're well aware of it. So we're being more directionally, we say things as they are. We're being far more careful on how we express numbers and so forth and so on, because we dread the notion of being wrong. With that being said, I ask Krishna to get his feet wet and say something before I say something.
Right. So, Bill, first of all, if you look at the last quarter's press release, you'll find one or two mentions of very large contract wins in the Middle East as well. Now, those contracts are also being mobilized. All the equipment, people, training, everything has been mobilized across Q3, but you'll start seeing the revenue kicking in Q4. So it's not just the wildland contract we referred to in this press release. It's also earlier contract wins, and you can verify that. So really, there is quite a robust underpinning of our expectation of revenue growth in the Middle East. As Bernard said, do we want to put a number to it? It's definitely going to be in the high single digits. That's our expectation in the sequentially. And obviously, it'll come with margin growth as we recover our fixed costs in a much more effective manner. Remember, most of the equipment is already on our books depreciating, so there's no additional capex or depreciation cost associated with earning this revenue. So it's going to be accretive to our margins.
Okay, that's helpful. And then last one for me is that on the North American, I certainly agree with the line of sight with regard to the sequential improvement in a top line. You had pretty vigorous improvement in the third quarter, and yet the incrementals were subdued. We probably have a decent amount of reactivation expense and R&M expense associated with those frac fleets. I'm just curious as to what drives the above-average incrementals in the fourth quarter when we saw pretty vigorous top-line growth in Q3 but subdued incrementals.
Actually, much of the revenue growth in Q4 will come from all the other products and service lines. This is what we saw in September. This is what we're seeing in October. Now, pressure pumping will continue to rise, but I think, we won't get, I don't think, any further, more rich incremental contribution from them, but they'll be diluted in terms of effect on margin by the incrementals of the other products and service lines. It will be much more robust in Q4 for us than they were in Q3.
It's activity mix. I mean, the growth in Q3 in North America dominated by pressure pumping, but the other product lines did contribute. But the returns, the incrementals on pressure pumping, obviously lower. In Q4, that reverses.
Reverses.
So the other product lines increase more. That's our expectation, and they'll bring more margin. So
the long description of various product lines was trying to cover the fact that they were moving, and I just didn't move as much in July and August. It is also true, I would add, that the types of clients that we're getting work from and inquiries from and so forth in NAM is a little bit different, was a little bit different already in September. It is in October. They was in the earlier part of Q3. Bigger companies. I think ones that have more high engineering content, etc.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Jim Wicklund with Credit Suisse. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen, and
morning.
Karen. Congratulations on the realization of the negatives of giving explicit guidance. Thank you. Just perform. You'll make us all happy.
Bernard, did I
hear you guys say that offshore is only about 10% of North American revenues?
Less than that, actually. If you include Canada, it's a bit less than that, but yes.
Okay. I didn't want that to be my first question, though. It's just a clarification. Bill was talking about the cost. You guys talked about the cost of reactivating, starting to reactivate your 10 idle pressure pumping spreads. You noted that you kept them well-maintained, which should reduce the capital costs required. Can you give us an idea of how much, is it $1 million, $2 million, $3 million to reactivate an idle spread today?
It's about $5 to $7 million in that range per spread, but obviously we will spend that if the pricing justifies bringing those fleets back online. This is roughly what we expect. It depends on the particular spread we're talking about.
That's helpful. Let me ask you a question that's kind of, I think, on everybody's mind, and that's the free cash flow issue. Is there any reason why Weatherford can't generate free cash flow? Is there something about artificial lift or well construction or completions or formation evaluation that would cause them not to be able to generate free cash flow?
Not at all. I mean, free cash flow in Q2 and Q3 is a very simple story, Jim. Customers are not paying us on time, and we are obviously incensed about it. Given the balance sheet, and the financial stability of some of these very large customers, the way they're managing the cash flow is a little bit egregious, to say the least. When you think about, their own cash flow and the uses they're making, they're favoring dividend payments and other things like that, including some stock buybacks, and disadvantaging the service industries that are vendors to them. Obviously, this is not a permanent situation. With oil prices improving, this will reverse itself. But it's a simple situation that explains the free cash flow miss. It's not insidious or something different from that.
The other thing you can say is that our DSOs are up about 14 days from the beginning of the year, right, on receivables.
Yeah.
Our DPOs have been actually...
This was up 14 days, yeah.
Up 14 days. Our DPOs on the payable side are actually down about 8 days. The point being that we've been paying down, our payables are rather low, and there are reasons why we've done that, because we're getting good terms from our suppliers for the future. But our clients have done exactly the opposite, and outside of contractual terms. And now, the other thing about Weatherford is, of course, for us, because we have leverage, we need EBITDA in order to create free cash flow, or we have to harvest our balance sheet. Harvest our balance sheet, we need inventory, which we get, liquidation. We also need a receivables payables balance, which is positive. It hasn't been positive for 2 quarters for the reason that Krishna explained. That's it. Period.
And okay. I think I'd like to expand. This is not just a free cash flow comment. We have seen many instances now of internationally, particularly, basically international, where we have won contracts and signed contracts with a price list with customers. And these very well-shod customers have come back after signing the price list in the midst of executing a multi-year contract and demanded pricing discounts. This is what happens in a down cycle, and we have given them pricing discounts. On top of that, they have delayed payments to us, right? And not just us. This is the comments I'm making are generic. All service companies have gone through both pricing discounts and slow payment from these customers. Now, what happens, and this is, again, based on experience, many, many years of experience, when oil prices do reverse, we feel that we can certainly go back, and this has happened in conversation with customers, we can certainly go back and request pricing increases. And these customers will reward us for loyalty, as they will reward the rest of the industry as well for being patient with them. And that is part of the mechanism of reversing the pricing internationally and reversing the payment terms as well. This is the real world. It doesn't just depend on what you write on a piece of paper. It's a relationship that goes very, very deep and over many years. And both sides share the pain, and when that turns, everybody shares in the gain, despite the rhetoric you hear publicly. Yeah?
And as investors, we kind of lose track of the time frames that actual industries operate under, so I think that's part of it. My last question, if I could, Bernard, you mentioned that Sub-Saharan Africa and Asia-Pac can't get any worse. Those have been the two worst markets for everybody. But not being able to get any worse is positive. Does that mean your margins, your income, operating income, won't get any worse either?
I think actually from what we see, it is getting a little bit better. No, I mean, it's a negative, and let's be very clear. But Q4 is, from what we see, is better than Q3 simply because of cost cuts.
Okay.
But have continued. Okay. But not, don't look at it for the top line because there's really, we don't see anything there. So the answer is we are on, you know, as cautious as we've become now, we are on safe grounds, we believe. When we say that it won't get any worse in Asia Pacific and SSA, the truth is, with self-help, as in cost cuts, the losses will not be as great. And believe me, they've been the worst performers in Eastern Hemisphere by far.
They have.
Without that, it would have been actually far better behaved.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks,
John. And your next question comes from the line of Ola Slor with Morgan Stanley. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Bernard, must be a bit good to get this quarter in a rearview mirror.
Yes.
I must admit I felt a little queasy coming in this morning, but thanks for a very clear conference call in terms of how you see the next quarter shaping up. You do run a bunch of land rigs, which give you also some kind of forward view on what's going on, maybe beyond that of other service companies. I wonder whether you can tell us what you see, particularly in North Africa, Middle East, from your window in through the land rigs.
I will let Krishna answer most of it. I will just say that, in general, the quantity of inquiries and also of bidding invitations has been substantially increased over the past 60 to 90, let's say make it 90 days for future activity, particularly in MENA. You want to also?
That's right. I mean, we're seeing a record number of tenders coming in from the GCC countries in general, particularly two countries where we have three countries, in fact, where we have a number of rigs being tendered. And this is a leading indicator. We are a contract driller. One of our businesses is contract drilling. So it's a leading indicator for increased land activity, first in the form of rig tenders, and then, of course, services will follow. So we are quite, let's say, enthusiastic about increased activity, and then, of course, in down the line with the better commodity prices, increased pricing as well in the Middle East.
Remember that, by and large, we are, although we have, obviously, plays in offshore, TRS, etc., we are historically predominantly a land player. And this is not true for the rigs, it's true for everything else. Therefore, the early warning system that land rigs represent is very valuable to us for all the other production service lines, because this is where we play. That's our natural spot, land.
Just through the grapevine, it sort of seems as if we are looking at maybe tenders for a total of maybe as many as 40 or 50 incremental land rigs across some of the key kind of Kuwait, Saudi, Abu Dhabi. Could you give us some color?
Algeria. It's really Algeria, Oman, Saudi Arabia will be and Kuwait. Would be the primary
countries. And your number is fairly accurate, except that on top of the current tenders, which approximate the number you said, there's another tender coming out from one of those countries for an additional 45 rigs. Exactly. In the next 6 months, we are working with the customer closely on this one. So, you know, there's going to be a significant addition of rigs in the next 12 months, I would say, in that region.
The interesting thing, and this, I don't want to get sidestepped here, is that this increase in drilling activity is not expected to come with a material increase in oil producing capacity. Much of it is driven to gas.
That's right.
Interestingly enough.
And also to stay in place.
To stay in place. That is actually a separate comment, which I don't want to get into, but that's an interesting side comment.
So this is what gives you part of your confidence when you're talking about growth beyond the fourth quarter in the
fourth quarter is just the beginning. Frankly, the third quarter should have been the fourth quarter. Or put another way, you know, we have to start somewhere. And the fourth quarter is a beginning in our view. And but it's not, you know, it's not one quarter. It's just for that part of the world, it's a should be a methodical, organized, disciplined growth process, not with some crazy startups and things like that, not at all. Again, the operating focus has been so intense at Weatherford. It's just we'll take our time. Quality is an obsession. We can live with growth and quality. We can live with growth and margin. We can live with growth and predictability. We can live with growth and very good free cash flow. I know these seems sort of all hard for us to manage historically, but that's what we think we're organized for doing today. And that's what we plan on doing Q4 and 17. Beyond is, we don't know. Beyond is beyond. But Q4 and 17 directionally, more of the same.
Second question, yes or no question, Krishna. Free cash flow in the fourth quarter, yes or no?
Yes, there will be free cash flow in the fourth, positive free cash flow. It of course, the extent of it will depend on customer collection, the extent of customer collection. So, wish us luck on that one.
At this point, we'll settle for free cash flow. We should settle for free cash flow. Don't promise too
much.
That's right. Finally,
the other aspect, if I may, is that your EBITDA is climbing.
That's right.
Because at the end of the day, free cash flow comes from EBITDA. The end of the day, I mean, that's where it should come from. But of course, in a very depressed market, it's hard. That's where it should come from. And then it becomes a lot of free cash flow, which seems to be a antithesis of Weatherford. And just give us some time.
And finally, I'd like to add also that, just from a strategic standpoint, there is no existential liquidity issue now for Weatherford, right? We have a first major maturity of debt only in 2019, sometime in 2019. So there's no, imminent threat or anything like that. So we will recover our liquidity position even stronger as we go through the next quarter.
No, I wasn't suggesting there was a liquidity situation. It is still nice to see free cash flow. Finally, 39 cents was a bit of a shocker, but it sounds like you suggest that 27 cents was sort of more the number that would be computed on a comparable way to the way first call
was
put together.
Yeah, the normalized is 27 cents. Had we just been able to do the normal tax benefit on the U.S. losses, right? So the expectation was that we would continue to do that in the third quarter, as we've done for the last several quarters. Now, we were not able to do it for accounting reasons because of the valuation allowance charge we had to take, and that reversed the tax benefit on the U.S. So the 39 cents comes like a sticker shock, but the real underlying is 27 cents.
Well, you might want to expand a little bit on how that works for if the U.S. becomes profitable.
Well, the U.S. becomes profitable going forward, then we will see profits in the U.S. and no tax charge against it. So, in fact, the tax rate will be an artificially low tax rate in some
cases. Get the opposite phenomenon. It will get to be better than it really is.
Correct. Today, I mean, this quarter in Q3 and Q4, for example, we will be showing losses and a tax charge, and then in the future we'll show potentially taxable profits, but very low tax, no tax in the U.S., for example, and no cash taxes for years to come either in the United States. So it's really the way the quirky accounting really works on this one more than anything else. So one should not get sidetracked by that.
Well, it'd be nice to see a few quarters coming up that will look deceptively good on top of being good. We can handle that, Bernard. But thank you very much. I'll hand it back.
Thank you, Ola.
And your next question comes from the line of Mike Urban with Deutsche Bank. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for sneaking me in. Sort of harp on the Middle East, but it does seem to be really a critical driver here in the near term. You talked about that $1.5 billion dollars in contract wins as being net or incremental. You're going to do roughly $1.5 billion in that whole region, in the MENAP region, this year. Is that suggesting that over the next few years that business can double, or are there offsets to that?
Well, let's just bracket it. The $1.5 billion over 3 to 4 years, so take $1.5 billion divided by, $3.5 billion, and that will give you the annual increase. It's a net increase. So that's absolutely correct. So let's call it $400 million a year in simplistic terms, but that's real. So you can say that if we are 1.5, that's MENA and Asia Pacific together. You could add $400 million. Now the numbers will end up being different because you really get some in Q4, and it will move the way operations move. But that is a reasonable thing to say. The billion and a half doesn't all happen in 1 year. It gets spread over 3 to 4 years. So that is the difference between what you said and the reality. However, I would also add that the billion and a half, which is in hand, has been in hand for a few weeks. They were signed different times, and since we already mobilized for some, actually for quite a bit, and so forth, there will be other, further net incremental contracts. Clearly, there's also a signing of the signing contracts, win some, lose some. We purely focus on the net incremental, otherwise it's meaningless. There will be further contractual gains that will happen in future quarters. They may not be as spectacular, I don't know, but there'll be further. That will add fuel to the growth fire there. But again, the key for us is to deploy the people, the equipment, in a manner that is operationally very focused on quality, NPT, safety, because it's good marketing. It also generates better returns. And so the growth will be, I think, gradual. It will be disciplined growth. The kind of disciplined growth that you would want us to have, that we want to have also. That's the one that gives the highest return, including free cash flow.
Okay, gotcha. And then just more broadly, you have laid out a path to significant growth with the current base of capital, both infrastructure and equipment that you have. Good problem to have, but once you get to that level and things normalize, I'm not sure what that even means anymore, but once you get to some sort of normalized level of business and activity, what do you think your capital intensity is going forward? So in the past, I mean...
We actually worked a lot on it, but that will take a while before we get there. For us, it's around 5%, 6%, 5%, something like that, percentage of revenues. But that's not today. That's when you get to that normalized level that I agree with you, it's hard to know what normalized is, but I know what we think of normalized. This is where we'll end up with a sort of product service line mix that we have, remembering that we will maintain, protect, and enhance. Pressure pumping will maintain, protect, and enhance rigs. We're not likely to pour capital there.
And
because the highest return product service lines are, completion, well construction, lift, etc. Not that.
And on a working capital basis, I mean, that used to be, 25, 30 cents per dollar revenue growth. What do you think that is?
No,
kind of normalized?
No, I think 15 to 20 is much more reasonable as an assumption going forward, subject to the collection bumps that the whole industry is seeing now, right now. So this, I'm talking about a normal situation, which we expect to, take place sometime in 17. And then you're looking at 15 to 20.
In the near term, actually, you may have that be a lower number for 17, for example, based on the fact our DPOs are so low,
yes,
and the DSOs are so high.
Yeah,
but that's a one-time sort of adjustment. Do you understand what I just said?
When we enter 17, you're going to see also, the initial spurt in revenue growth, particularly in the product sales product lines, is going to denude inventory going forward. We are still long on inventory.
Yes.
It's not like... we have exhausted all our long inventory from the past. So you're going to see a slow start in the buildup of working capital.
Right.
And then it'll gradually normalize at the levels I spoke about.
Okay. That's all for me. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Waqar Syed from Goldman Sachs. Your line is open.
For taking my question. I understand your reluctance in giving concrete guidance, but any color that you can provide in how we should be thinking about incremental margins, either on a regional basis or company-wide basis, for fourth quarter and perhaps in 2017 as well?
Waqar, I think given that we have taken out a lot of our fixed cost base, and our capex, incremental capex requirements are quite modest, and we grow into our top line growth based on those two fronts. Our incrementals will be quite strong. I would say well in excess of 50%. I don't want to say more than that at this point. Yeah, but on a company level, you're looking at that kind of incremental.
Okay, that's on the EBIT side and on the EBITDA line side, would that be still within that range, or would that be materially less than that?
No, EBITDA will be better than that.
Would be better than 50%? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Waqar.
Great. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We've gone a little bit past the hour, this concludes the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call, and you may now disconnect.